Good morning.
Good morning.
Today we're doing our one day sitting. So I thought I'd talk about Zazen, talk about meditation. And what I'm going to do is read to you what a fascicle called from the Shobo Genzo, which means true Dharma eye, by Dogen Zenji, the founder of our school in Japan in the 13th century. The name of the fascicle is Zazengi, which means principles of Zazen, rules of Zazen, guidelines for Zazen. I think guidelines is nice. Principles. Rules sounds a little too rigid. It's a short fascicle. Dogen wrote three fascicles on Zazen. One that we're most familiar with is the Fugan Zazengi, which often people chant in the monastery. Anyway, this is called Zazengi. So here's how it starts. Studying Zen is Zazen. For Zazen, one should have a quiet place, spread a thick sitting mat, do not let drafts or vapors, do not admit rain or dew. You should secure and maintain the spot where you place yourself. There are traces from the past of those who sat on a vajra seat or sat on a rock. They all spread a thick layer of grass to sit on. The place where you sit should be bright. It should not be dark, either day or night. The technique is to keep it warm in winter and cool in summer. So that's the first paragraph. So first he says, studying Zen is Zazen. So he's saying Zen means meditation. And in Soto Zen, Zen in general, the kind of hallmark of the school is to sit meditation. So this is a primary practice for us. I could probably give you a whole lecture on the meaning of what that might be in the sense of kind of more global, universal meaning, and the very specific meaning of sitting itself. But I'm not going to do that today. So Zazen can be a very broad statement about reality itself. Zazen can refer to sitting, seated meditation. And then he says, for this Zazen, we need a quiet place. Well, Ocean Gate might be a little deficient in that particular quality. We like to think of it as really centering yourself, bringing yourself right into the experience as it is right now and not being distracted by the traffic. You can think of the traffic as kind of the waves of the ocean coming into the shore. So for Zazen, one should have a quiet place, which could also refer to your mind, right? Having a quiet mind. Spread a thick sitting mat and do not let drafts or vapors do not admit rain or dew. So you need a place that's not, you're not going to be distracted by the elements while you're sitting meditation. And then it says you should secure and maintain the spot where you place yourself. So I think this means that we want to be aware of all of these various aspects that Dogen's talking about. Be aware of finding a place that's a good place for sitting. So maybe if you're at home, you wouldn't sit in a place where your cat's going to crawl all over you, although that may not be possible. But this way of, or you might not decide to sit at the same time that you're cooking something that's going to boil over, so that you keep your mind on this space. So that's what we try to do in the Zendo, right? It's creating a very formal space for a particular activity that has particular forms that we engage in that remind us and center us back into the activity itself. And then he says, there are traces from the past of those who sat on a vajra seat or sat on a rock. So this is a reference to the Buddha's enlightenment. So he's saying, when the Buddha was enlightened, he sat on the diamond seat. He sat on the Vajra seat. It refers to sitting cross-legged under the Bodhi tree. Also, he says that he talks about sitting on a rock, which is a reference to Zen masters. So the idea that some Zen masters sat on rocks. So here he's bringing forth this teaching that when we sit Zazen, we're also sitting with Shakyamuni Buddha, we're also sitting with all of the ancestors, all of the previous practitioners of Zen, practitioners of Buddhism. We're very interested in lineage in Zen. This lineage is this notion, this teaching that we say warm hand to warm hand. So the teachings are passed on from one person to the next. So we have lineage stories that start with Shakyamuni Buddha. He passed the Dharma to Mahakashyapa. So there are stories all the way through the generations of ancestors. So there's this linear progression, but there's also a non-linear progression that is, you could say, maybe completely inside time and space, completely outside time and space. This way in which all the Buddhas and ancestors come forward and presence themselves simultaneously with your sitting. All the Buddhas and ancestors are here simultaneously supporting our practice and verifying our practice. So when we sit down in formal meditation, there is this idea, we don't have to make it into like, ooh, I'm sitting down with all the Buddhas and ancestors, and we're sitting down with all the Buddhas and ancestors. So they're always presencing themselves. So that's part of what's going on when we sit Zazen. And then he goes back to this place of you shouldn't sit in the dark. I've been in zendos where it's so dark that you can't tell your zafu from the zabuton, where it's like so dark. I personally like it to be light. When things are dark, we tend to fall asleep. So we want to stay mentally alert during Zazen. We don't want to fall asleep. So I think the key here is not to dim the lights so much that your tendency is to not be able to be attentive. That you take a nap, or maybe you just can't distinguish objects in a way, so your eyesight kind of just goes off, and maybe you have fantasies and things like that. So he says, not too bright, not too dark. Warm in the winter and cool in summer. So, gosh, that doesn't sound very Zen, does it? Because we hear all these stories about people cutting their arms off and sitting around in the snow and all this kind of thing. But he's saying, no, actually, you don't want to be in these extreme conditions. You don't want to be in a situation in the Zendo where it's too cold or too hot. So the next section is, cast aside all involvements and discontinue the myriad affairs. Good is not thought of, evil is not thought of, it is not mind, intellect, or consciousness, it is not thoughts, ideas, or perceptions. Do not figure to make a Buddha, sloth off, sitting, or reclining. So he's saying, when you come to the Zendo, when you come to sit, like today, when we're sitting Zazen, we want to let go of all of our worldly affairs. We want to let go of thinking about, you know, what we're going to buy at the supermarket today. We want to let go of even thinking about what happened with the shootings that happened. We want to just let all that go and just fully presence ourselves for this moment. We also don't want to get caught in judgments. So this is a real pitfall in Zazen. As we sit down, maybe we start to be in pain. We start to have a lot of thoughts. And we say to ourselves, oh, I am so bad at this. You know, I'm feeling pain. Like, we're not supposed to feel pain, are we, during Zazen? Like, if I were really a good Zen student, I wouldn't be in pain. Or, because I'm having all these thoughts, I am thinking about what I'm going to get for lunch. I am thinking about what I'm going to do tonight when the sitting's over. I am thinking about this, that, and the other thing. So just don't discriminate. Just let it go. Because as soon as we get caught in thinking about ideas about what's good and what's bad, we're either going to chase after what we think is good. So let's say you have a great period of zazen. Great period of zazen, right, means it went by really fast. You felt really good. You must be on your way to enlightenment. So that's the other side. So one side is this, boy, that felt really good. I want more of that. Like, more, please. Universe, please give me more of that. Or that was really horrible, and I don't want any more of that. I want to get out of here. So we say, just sit. Just sit. Just come and sit. Not good, not bad. You're going to have experiences that you are unpleasant or experiences that are pleasant, but you just try to let go of them. Don't be judgmental about them. It doesn't say anything about you. It just says, oh, in this moment, this is what I'm experiencing. So he says, good, don't think about good, don't think about, he uses the word evil. Other translations have opinions about right or wrong, or what is bad or good. And then Dogen writes in the Fukan Zazengi, which is another fascicle about Zazen. Fukan Zazengi means universal promotion of the principles of Zazen. He says, if the least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion. So when we get caught in likes and dislikes and judgmental about them, because we're going to have likes and dislikes, when we're judgmental about them and we get led around, then we become very confused about what it is that we're doing. So we want to have this clarity, which is difficult. We want to have this clarity of just letting go of our opinions about what's going on. I would say that if you're sitting there and you have a pain and you think that you're really hurting yourself, then you should move. Right? You don't say to yourself, I shouldn't have any likes and dislikes, therefore, my leg's asleep and I'm just going to sit here with my leg being asleep. If your leg falls asleep, you should move. It's not good for your sciatic nerve. So you want to move. You don't want to have your leg stay asleep. And I'll tell you, one time at San Francisco Zen Center, a guy got up after his leg fell asleep and he fell against the wall and broke his arm. So, please, take care of yourself. So there's likes and dislikes and judgments, and there's just using good common sense. So, he says, it is not mind, intellect, or consciousness. So we can talk a little more about what your mind's doing, but this is not an intellectual process. This is not a process of your mind. It's not a process of your intellect, it's not a process of consciousness. And then he says, it's not thoughts, it's not ideas, and it's not perceptions. Mm-hmm. So Zazen itself is not about that. It's not about sitting around thinking about Zazen. It's not about having perceptions of what you think it is. So you're not, what he's saying here is that don't be engaged in theoretical pursuing Zazen from a theoretical point of view. And then, do not figure to be a Buddha. Again, this is a kind of theoretical mindset about, and it also gets into the good and bad question, thinking about what is enlightenment? Am I sitting like an enlightened person? Am I sitting like a Buddha? All of those things, we just don't even need to worry about that stuff. We don't need to chase after any of those things. And then this interesting sentence where he says, sloth off sitting or reclining. Sloth off sitting or reclining. So sloth is to let go of, not sloth in the sense of being a sloth, being lazy, but in the sense of letting go of, letting something kind of roll off of you. So I think what he's saying here is that you don't have to be terribly concerned about the position that your body's in the sense of judgmental about it. So I think this is something that we have a real difficulty with. Some of you are sitting in chairs. Some of you are sitting on cushions. Some of you are sitting on a bench. I can't tell you how many people say to me, oh, I can't sit in a chair. I struggled with this for a long time, that, I shouldn't sit in a chair. It happened to have fairly good turnout in my hips, so I can sit cross-legged fairly well, but some people don't. Some people have back problems. The idea is really not about whether you're sitting in a chair or you're even lying down or sitting on a bench or you're using a back jack. The idea is that you have your mind and your body in such a position that you can stay aware, that you can stay alert and aware, that your spine and your energy can flow through your body. So it's really not about this kind of classic sitting. I don't know very many people who sit full lotus. I think of all the teachers I know very few people who actually sit full lotus. So this is kind of a story that we have about we have to be able to be in a certain body position in order to sit zazen. And I don't think that's true. But you want to be in a body position where you can stay awake, where you're not going to get caught in fantasies, where you're not going to be hyperactive. So this way that you have some ease, you can find some ease. So I think that's why he says here, sloth off, let go of these ideas about sitting or reclining. And then he says, in Fukan Zazenki, he says, the practice of Zazen has nothing whatever to do with the four bodily attitudes of moving, standing, sitting, or lying down. So it is about your position from a yogic point of view, having a certain body position, but it's not about the ideas that we have about it. Does that make sense? So don't not do something because you have some idea about you have to do it in a certain way. That's really not very helpful. Don't stop doing it because you have this idea that you're not some kind of idealized Zen posture that we hear about. Because very few people are actually engaged in that idealized posture. Then he says, you should be moderate in food and drink. In other words, you probably won't be very alert after Thanksgiving dinner. So, be moderate in food and drink. Hold dear the passing days and nights and take to Zazen as though brushing a fire from your head. In a monastery or a larger temple, they have a han, which is a block of wood about this big. It has a handle on it, and you hit it with a mallet, and it marks time before Zazen. So there'll be like a 15-minute han where you like go donk. Every minute you go donk. And then after the first 7 minutes, you go donk, 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 donk. And then you do it again for another 5 minutes, and then donk, 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 donk. Like that. And then third one is donk, donk, donk. So that's the han. You're supposed to be in your seat by the second roll down. And on the han is written a verse, and the verse is, wake up, life is transient, swiftly passing, be aware of the great matter, don't waste time. Wake up, life is transient, swiftly passing, be aware of the great matter, don't waste time. Your time. So when we sit zazen, we don't want to waste our time. Actually, we don't want to waste our time in our life in general. But this sense of hear the han, hold dear the passing days. So as we get older, we say, wow, time is flying by. It was yesterday that we did New Year's Eve, last New Year's Eve. So we all know that time is going by. Also, when I love that phrase, hold dear, because I thought about Sangha. I thought about hold dear these relationships. Hold dear the time that we spend with each other. Hold dear our support of each other. So this way that as a Sangha, that we rely on each other and support each other's practice. So these days, and long when we sit as well, there's this camaraderie that arises between us when we sit together. It's not spoken. It's just this energy that happens as we spend our time together. And then take the zazen as though brushing a fire from your head. Mm-hmm. First time I heard this, it was practice as if your hair is on fire. Because of my personality, I took that unconsciously, I think, as kind of like running around really intensely, you know. So it's like that's what my hair being on fire was, running around, practicing really intensely. I realize now that that's probably not what that means. So what do we do when our hair is on fire? Well, we might run around. And, of course, all that does is just supply oxygen to the fire. We might keep our heads and throw a blanket over our head. I think what Dogen's point, though, is that if your hair's on fire, you're really paying attention. If your hair's on fire, you're really in the present moment. So he's trying to say, bring that kind of attentiveness. He's not trying to say, be an absolutely crazy weenie beanie running around screaming. I'm practicing. So this way in which our attention is completely brought to the present moment. The fifth ancestor on Mount Huangmei worked only at zazen without any other occupation. So the fifth ancestor, this is called the record of the transmission of the light, the Denkaroku, and it is a lineage stories from starting with Shakyamuni Buddha through Dogen. Anyway, there's a story here about Huang Zhen, who's the fifth ancestor. So the story with Huangmei, he was on Mount Huangmei, so that's why his name's Huangmei, because he's named after his mountain. But his Dharma name is Huang Zhen. So the story is that when he was old, in his 70s, he went to the fourth patriarch and said, I want to practice. And the fourth patriarch said, well, I'm sorry, you're too old. So why don't you die and come back in your next lifetime and I'll still be here. So, what did you say, Sam?
I said, I guess I could leave.
Yeah. You're too old. But see, you've been practicing all this time. Right. Well, you're never too old to practice, despite this story. But it is an entertaining story. So as soon as that happened, he went and ran into this young woman who was on the river, and he said to the young woman, he said, may I have lodging for the night to her? And she said, well, I have to go ask my father. But actually what he meant was, can I lodge in your womb and be reborn? So he just magically went into her womb, and sure enough, she got pregnant. Her dad was not amused.
I haven't heard that one.
Nevertheless, she had the baby. And when she had the baby, this part's a little graphic, but she had the baby. The placenta was on the floor. She threw the baby into the with the baby and the placenta, and she was just going to leave him there. But he clawed his way out. It says, let's see. Her parents detested her and drove her out of the house. She had no place to turn to, so she worked in the village as a spinner by day and stayed at an inn at night. Finally, she had a child, and thinking he was unlucky, left him in a river. So this is a little different story than the other one. However, he was not swept away by the current, and he was not even wet. Spirits protected and cared for him for 7 days. These spirits were two birds who covered him with their wings during the day and two dogs who guarded him at night by crouching over him. He remained fresh in body and mind with no loss of faculties. When she saw this, his mother thought it was remarkable and began to feed him. He begged for food with his mother while he was growing up. People called him the nameless child. A wise man said, the child has all but seven of the marks of a Tathagata, of a Buddha. Later, he met the fourth patriarch on a walk on Mount Hongmei. The fourth patriarch thought that his bone structure was unusual and quite unlike that of an ordinary boy. So he asked him, what is your name? And so on, and silently recognized him as a vessel of the Dharma. And anyway, so he becomes his student. There wasn't an hour out of the whole day when he did not do zazen. Though he did not neglect his other tasks, this is how much he did zazen. In the end, in 1675, he said to his followers, my work is finished, so I will depart, saying, I am going to die, and he died sitting. So that's why this last part here is why this is being used as an example.
Past the clawing baby.
That was another version of the story that I read. I think that was in Andy Ferguson's book. The interesting thing about this story, though, all the kind of mythological things aside, is that his intention carried over from this one birth to the next, and that he had this really deep, strong intention to practice. And so by doing that, he also, this practice was being expressed through his zazen. So that was what Dogen's point was. He says, the fifth ancestor, this is back to the text, on Mount Hongmei worked only at zazen without any other occupation. Then Dogen says, during zazen, you should wear your kesa. I also wrote raksu. So during zazen, we wear, or this is the okesa. Jock is wearing a raksu today. So when we're sitting zazen, we wear these formal robes. You know, Trungpa Rinpoche, who was a Tibetan teacher, he had this kind of interesting thing that he did, which was people dressed up. To attend lectures, they dressed up to do meditation. So there's this way in which I think, you know, we can look at this and say, I'm taking this seriously. You know, I'm not going to sit zazen, you know, in my underwear. That I'm going to, you know, we're a much more casual culture in a lot of ways than, say, we were in 1950 when I was born. So this way that we take it seriously by the way that we're dressed. But in particular, he's addressing monks in this text. So he's saying, you go to zazen wearing your robes. You go to zazen wearing your kesa. Put down a cushion. The cushion is not placed completely under your crossed legs, but only under the rear half so that the mat is beneath the legs and the cushion beneath the spine. This is the way that all the Buddhas and ancestors have sat during zazen. So if you sit on the front of your zafu, it causes your pelvis to tilt forward slightly, which is easier to keep your spine straight. So when you're sitting in a chair, these chairs kind of slant back a little bit, so it can be helpful to put a cushion underneath your butt that raises it up, so you're a little higher than maybe your knees, so that you get a chance to move forward. So that's one of the nice things about sitting on the bench more than sitting on a chair, is that I think it's a little better for your posture in that way. But again, the most important thing here is to be able to sit in such a way that you're not being driven away by being in pain, right? So you can play with this. We have cushions. You can play with this and see what works for you, what you need. So usually, Jaco and I, during zazen, if we see you sitting in a way that looks like it's like super uncomfortable, we're going to come and suggest to you, well, maybe you should try this, maybe you should try this, and find ways to make you more comfortable. So and then he says, sit in either the half lotus or the full lotus position. For the full lotus position, place your right foot on your left thigh and your left foot on your right thigh. The toes should be even with the thighs, not out of alignment. For a half lotus position, simply place your left foot on your right thigh. So the most important thing about this description is that whether you're sitting cross-legged or you're sitting in a chair, is that the position keeps your hips balanced, your back straight, and your head in proper alignment, where our heads weigh a lot. So if we're sitting like this, we're going to get pretty uncomfortable because I think our heads weigh like 7 pounds.
Eight pounds.
Sue's head weighs 8 pounds. So the instruction is that your ears are over your shoulders. So I do tend to sit like this, so it's a little harder for me to have my ears over my shoulders. But I'm aware of that. Not, you know, if I force my head back like this, then that's not very comfortable, and that's going to be a problem. So just try to find a way to be relaxed, to keep your core muscles engaged so that, you know, you're lifting up and you've got the support, but at the same time to relax your shoulders and to find a position for your head that seems workable but is not really uncomfortable. And then usually you're looking down like this. So the idea would be like you get your head and then kind of tilt it forward and look down at a 45-degree angle. And you also would, you could start out by swaying back and forth this way and find, you know, you find your center here. Okay, well, that's my center. And then you go back and forth like this, right? Find your center this way. Engage your core muscles, and you're sitting up straight. But again, if you find yourself really tense, that can be problematic. So you just want to kind of keep coming back and just gently relaxing and trying to find that place that works for you. You might experience pain. I think all of us experience some pain in Zazen, but it shouldn't be a kind of pain that's so distracting that's all you can think about. So if that's what you're experiencing in Zazen, then it's really important to come and talk to Jocko or I, find another way to sit so that you're not experiencing a lot of pain all the time. Because if that's what's happening, then that's all you're going to think about. All you're going to think about is, I'm in a lot of pain and I want to get out of this pain. So if it comes and goes or drops away, that's one thing. But if that's your total experience, then we should talk about it. Then Dogen writes, loosen your robe and arrange them properly. So have your clothes not be restrictive. Place your right hand on your left foot and your left hand on your right hand. Place the tip of your thumbs together with your hands in this position. Place them against your body. So this is the mudra. And the mudra is this. This is the mudra for sitting. So I was told, this is kind of funny, that you should be able to slip a cellophane from a cigarette package. This dates me here. We would never say that now. So this way of just you know, gently having your thumbs together like this. Now, sometimes you can realize that if you pay attention, that you're like thinking really hard. You're like, ooh, you know, you're pressing your thumbs together. Maybe you're going like this, you know, with your mudra. So you're like tensing up your hands. So you want to just keep your hands relaxed. And you also, the traditional way is your navel, is the hands are against your navel, against your body here, even with your navel. Now, some people sit, and this is the way I was taught, sit with their hands in their lap like this, okay? So I don't want you to not come to Zazen because you don't, this is uncomfortable for you, okay? So I would much rather have you come and have your hands sitting in your lap. And actually for most of my career sitting Zazen, I've had my hands in my lap, and it's only been the last 2 years or so that I've started sitting like this. Just because it kind of engages my torso more, and it kind of creates this energy. So, but if that doesn't work for you, sit like this. Or maybe you end up sitting like this. This is the preferred mudra. But, and again, I think it's more important to sit than it is to so I'm some of my Zen teacher friends might say, oh, you are being too nice. You're being too lenient here. Anyway, please come and sit. So, hands like this, and then, this is your mudra. Straighten your body and sit erect. Do not lean to the left or right. Do not lean forward or backwards. The ears should be aligned with the shoulders and the nose aligned with the navel. The nose aligned with the navel. The tongue should be placed up in the front of the palate. So your tongue tip is resting behind your teeth. Okay? Not pushing against your teeth, but just resting up kind of here and not plastered against the top of your mouth, just resting against the back of your front teeth. So what this does is it moves the placement of the hyoid bone, which is a bone that's right in here in your neck. A couple things that it does is it cuts down on the amount of saliva in your mouth, so you're not swallowing a lot. So you go through a whole period of Zazen without swallowing. So it does that. Also, what it does is it completes a kind of spinal stability by doing that. So there's actually some physiological event that's happening. And my physical therapist, who's Japanese, says that it also creates a energy. It closes an energy field so that you end up with this more energy coursing through your whole body. And it also, this bone, in Japan, when someone dies and they're cremated, the bones are not ground up, and the family goes to the bones when they're still right after the cremation. And they look for this bone because this bone has the image of a seated Buddha in it. So that's kind of interesting. So that's also associated with this bone that's up here in your throat. So you place your tongue against the back of your teeth. You breathe through your nose. So mouth is closed. Teeth are not clenched. So if you find yourself clenching your teeth, time to relax. Breathing through your nose. Sometimes when people sit, they think of Zazen, and this is not Zazen, but in other meditation traditions, there is this tradition of a kind of heavy-duty breathing event that's going on, but that's not Zazen. Zazen is not doing a kind of yogic breathing. Zazen is just whatever breath is happening for you at the moment, so you're really not paying a lot of attention to your breath. You're not focusing on your breath, per se. And then, having thus regulated body and mind, this is Dogen again, take a breath and exhale fully, sitting, and then here's what I'm talking about your mind. Think of not thinking. How do you think of not thinking? Non-thinking. Think of not thinking. How do you think of not thinking? Non-thinking. This is the art of Zazen. So let's talk about thinking, not thinking, and non-thinking for a minute. So Shiryu in Japanese refers to thinking, having thoughts. Thoughts are just the natural product of our mind. Uchamaroshi says mind secretions. I like that. Thoughts are mind secretions. So, in all likelihood, you're going to be thinking, you're going to have thoughts. Suzuki Roshi says, don't invite your thoughts to tea. So we know what that is, inviting your thoughts to tea. That's having those really big fantasies that you have, really big thoughts about things, and then you go, oh my gosh, we're guzzling tea together. And then you just come back to the present moment. No judgment, no beating yourself up about it, no comments about how good or bad you may be as a practitioner, just right back to the present moment. Then there's fushiryo, which means no thoughts. So some meditation techniques, there is this notion that you have no thoughts. The goal of the meditation is to stop and cut off thinking. That's not the goal of Zazen. So we're not trying to stop thoughts. I can remember when I first started meditating, I was doing kind of a Indian Hindu meditation. I think that might be the school it was from. I remember an image of you, like, imagine your thoughts are like a train going by, and then you focus on the space between the trains, and then at some point you go beyond that space between the train, and that's the place of no thoughts. But that's not what we're doing here. So we're not engaging our thoughts, having tea with our thoughts. We're not thinking about Zazen. We're trying to avoid being judgmental about Zazen. And then there's this place we're not trying to cut off all thinking altogether. So we're really not so much engaged in thinking. Does that make sense? We're not so much worried about thinking. And then there's the place of Hishiryo, which is non-thinking. So non-thinking is to accept your thinking without judgment, just being present, just sitting. One of the things that I heard one time was, put your mind in your hands. Put your mind in your hands. So my experience of that is I'm sitting in my mudra. If I put my mind in my hands, it's like feeling the sensation in my hands, but I'm not focusing on it so much that it becomes like this one point of concentration. It's this way of coming back to the present moment, this way of just coming back to what's happening. You can use sound. A lot of people do sound. So, you know, if you're really caught in thinking, you don't hear anything, right? So this coming back and going, oh, I hear the sounds. I can hear the traffic or hear the birds or whatever it is. So these ways that we just come back to the present moment, that's what we're doing, is just coming back to the present moment. Relaxing, coming back to the present moment, sloughing off, letting go. Just, that's all we're doing over and over again. And it's actually quite difficult, as I'm sure you know, having tried to do it. So that's the activity. We just have faith that it's transformative. We don't have to worry about what it's doing. We don't have to worry about having any agenda about what our Zazen is. Just placing ourselves and doing this together. That's all we're doing. It's just coming back and being here and doing this. So this is just sitting. And then Dogen says, Zazen is not the practice of jhana. So in Japanese, it's dhyana, jhana, and then in Sanskrit, it's jhana with a J. They may be pronounced slightly differently. I'm not so great at my Chinese. Anybody know how?
DH, you said?
Yeah, DH.
Yeah, it's not really a sound that I know.
Yeah, it's jhana, probably something like that.
Jhana. Yeah, it's a D's, maybe a DZ. There is no DH.
So this, in some Buddhist schools, in early Buddhism, and a lot of Buddhist schools, jhana states are concentration states in which one goes into a kind of trance state, a mental concentration absorption state. And in this state, you concentrate on one object in which all your sense activities are suspended. So Dogen's saying, this is not what we're doing. This is not Zazen. Okay? So he's pretty much covering the basis of, I think, even during that time, these ideas we have about what it is that we're doing. So in the Soto school, we're doing this activity called this meditation, which is called Zazen, that has specific instructions, parameters. And then there are other schools of meditation that are doing other things that have specific structure and parameters. I don't know whether, you know, I'm not going to say one's better than the other. I'm just saying in our school, this is what we do. We do Zazen. So he's saying Zazen is not the practice of jhana. He says it is the Dharma gate of great ease and joy. It's the Dharma gate of great ease and joy. It is undefiled practice realization. Practice realization refers to that we do not practice to become realized. We're not sitting zazen to become enlightened. We sit zazen because zazen is the activity of a Buddha. We sit zazen because zazen is a reflection of and enactment of the presencing of our own Buddha nature. So this is what Buddhists do. They sit zazen. So he's saying, he says, it is undefiled practice realization. Thank you very much.